name is Michelle Owen and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another Project. The date is the 12th of October 2009 and it's 12 minutes after midnight. Could you tell me your name, your age and where you come from?
Yeah, my name is Ben Edmonds. I'm 41. I come from Lewes, which is East Sussex. I grew up till I was 10 in London, Greenwich. Moved to Brighton for 2 years and then moved to a little village in East Sussex near Lewes, about 4 miles out, from the age of 12. Grew up in a village called Rodmell. And I lived there until that was sort of my sort of till I was a young adult, really. And I've then sort of been in that area as a in my sort of 20s. I moved around a bit to Brighton, moved to London for a little bit in my 20s, did a bit of travelling around the world. But kind of again came back to sort of that area in my sort of mid 20s, moved back to my parents a little bit in Rodmell. And then when I was 28, I think it was, I sort of became a parent. Me and my partner moved to Lewes, she was in Brighton, so we got ourselves a little place in Lewes. And have sort of done the family thing. So for the last kind of 14, I've got two boys, 14-year-old and 11-year-old. And me and my missus, we're still together and we have sort of live in Lewes. And it's a great place to have a family because it's quite a nice little town. It's not too redneck and hick. It's quite sort of, it suits me. It's quite a liberal-minded town. It's not too far from Brighton. It's kind of 15 minutes from Brighton, an hour from London. So you've got sort of access to sort of culture, but it's also tucked in the countryside. We can sort of leave out from that house. We can, within 1 minute, we're up in the, on downs in the middle of the countryside. So it's a nice sort of balance. That's where I'm from, and I'm quite influenced by the countryside and urban. I love, you know, kind of I like theatre and film and dance and all that sort of stuff. And I also like, so I like people, but I like getting away from people as well. I like it. Most things, in fact. Yeah.
And where are your family tonight?
Well, my dad and my partner, Sian, are here. Come watch us. And my mother-in-law is here. Sian's mum's here. My kids, my two boys, they're with my mum. Back at, staying overnight at Rodmell, at Gran's.
What's Rodmell like?
What's Rodmell like? It's like a village. I tell you what, it's nice. When I kind of had my rites of passage times there, really. You know, my did the whole teenage thing there, and that was great. And what was interesting about it was there was only a total of about 12 kids within a 10-year age range of. And so we sort of formed this gang of friends. If you wanted to have a social life, you made friends with who they were. So there was quite a cross-section of life from you know, middle class to sort of farmers' kids. I kind of caught quite an age range. So we had quite a cross mix. So you were kind of, one of the good things about it was you would mix with people who weren't necessarily your own tribe, kind of, you know, culturally. Which was great. I really enjoyed that, and I kind of had a pretty innocent and naive kind of unsophisticated teenage life, really. It was, I'm not saying, still had the vices and as kids, you know, villages, and you know, there's not much to do apart from drink and sex, really. So I'm not saying we're that innocent, but in terms of sort of culture, we're fairly innocent, you know, we're kind of a you know, it was rollicking in hay barns and looking at animals on walks in an altered state of mind.
Sounds quite
a sort of things you get up to in the country, but yeah.
Describe your outfit for me, please.
Okay, I've got here a stripy blade. This is my kind of psychedelic smart outfit. Clashing, a triple clash of vertical stripe blazer, a lovely sort of Indian shirt all sorts of patterns on it, and again a nicely sort of brightly patterned tie. So a triple clash, a smart black trousers, and some funky red shoes.
Is this what you'd normally wear?
I'd wear this if I was going out to a party, perhaps. Yeah. If party clothes, not my normal day-to-day clothes.
But you're normally quite colourful.
I am quite colourful, although I'm also quite lazy. I can look quite drab. I'm quite happy walking around in a grey, dirty old shirt and ancient trousers. I can be quite a scruff, but I like to dress up smart sometimes.
Are you working?
Yeah.
What do you do?
I'm a clown. I'm self-employed, and I've been a clown a gainfully employed clown for 15 years.
How did you start?
Okay, that is I had to give the story how I became a clown. Okay, I didn't sort of grow up thinking I want to be a clown. I didn't know what I wanted to do when I was younger. When I was about 20, someone introduced me to juggling, as purely as a hobby, as a sort of physical skill, and I got quite into it. Just like could be golf, could be football. It was juggling. Just got into juggling, which is just a physical hobby, and I got really into it. I suddenly found I got kind of something about it. It's quite meditative, and I got quite obsessed with it, and did it all the time. Got addicted to juggling, and for about. And I had a normal job at that point. I was a printer, and I'd juggle on the train on the way to work. I'd juggle in the queue in the bank. I was just start juggling. I got right into it, and I got pretty good. You get that obsessed with something. You kind of get through those first platters. Like learning a musical instrument or anything, I've never had any joy with it. I start learning it, and I get to that first platter, repeating it, and give up. Whereas juggling, I kind of was that obsessed that I kind of kept at it and then did a lot. And I went to, so I started meeting other jugglers, and I went to a juggling club in Brighton, and we'd meet once a week and juggle, and we'd do swap tricks, and I'd meet other, and some professional jugglers, and all this sort of thing. And so I got into the whole juggling thing, there's quite inspiring, this woman there called Mim, who's very inspiring, and she gave me this leaflet. That was about showed this week a course way up in Bristol, and it was called In the Study of the Fool, and it was kind of theatrical, like a drama course in the study of the fool, F-O-O-L, fool, and the write up of it interests me. I thought, yeah, this looks really quite interesting. So I went up to Bristol and I did this weekend workshop in the fall, and it was at this sort of circus training centre at some called Fall Time up in Bristol. I did this 2-day workshop, and it was completely it blew me away. It was a pivotal point in my life, and in that weekend we did sort of a lot of improvisation games, and sort of it was like drama workshop, but very much to do with improvisation and sort of foolery. And one of the principles of that was the principle of yes, and always going with the yes, and seeing where the yes, never saying no to anything, and accepting every proposition, going with the yes, and it was very inspiring, and it kind of, that's the first point where it kind of almost opened me up really to another whole way of life. It's kind of a really sort of was inspired by that. And anyway, then I moved to London about 6 months later. There was that enticed me. There was another whole stuff, not just juggling, but this sort of performance thing. And I then went to a place called Circus Space in London. It's this circus training centre, and this was really early days. It was in near Caledonian Road in North London, and it was just setting up, and it was just this big hall with a few people, and they'd rigged up a couple of trapeze ropes and tightrope, and they were at that point looking for sort of voluntary helpers in building the place, basically. And it was just doing out this old warehouse, and I thought, great, I got involved in that, and in return for sort of doing just loads of free labouring you've got sort of free goes and all this circus equipment, and just got to meet all these people, these sort of colourful performer type people. So I was in London for about 6 months at Circus Space doing voluntary work, and then I came back home and I went back to my normal job, which was a screen printer, which was okay, pretty kind of monotonous, and I'd go a bit mad with the monotony of it, but it was work and I could sort of work quite hard, and it was, you could sort of do it as it was a freelance work, you could work really hard to save up a bit. And I then went travelling, and I went to, I spent 2.5 to 3 years abroad, and I got this work, did a working holiday visa thing to Australia, and went to Thailand and Australia and Borneo. On the way in Thailand, oh yeah, just add to this, at this point I was starting to get into a whole sort of hippie phase, and my hair was starting to grow long, I had sort of dreadlocks, and yeah, this is the thing, yeah, coming back to the weekend workshop, the full one, there's this, at the end of this weekend workshop, the teacher gave us all sort of advice, you know, to her sort of crits of each person at the end of the thing, and hers to me was, told me to get my hair cut. She said, Ben, get your hair cut, and I was like, why? And she said, because you hide behind it, and when your hair's hanged down, you hide behind it, and as a fool, we want to see you open up, and you know, so I sort of took on that advice, and whenever I was going for sort of being in a flat extroverted mood, I would tie my hair up out the way. I was in Thailand and I was in an extroverted mood, had my hair tied up on top like this, and my dreadlocks are tied on top in a bunch from top of my head out of my face. And there was this fruit and vegetable market, and I love markets, I love the whole, one of my favourite places, and one of my favourite places are fruit and vegetable markets. They don't exist so much now with supermarkets in this country, and but I love that whole sort of bizarre atmosphere, you know. And there was a stall of pineapples, and I picked up this pineapple. It had the leaves coming off the top, and the hair was coming out the top of my head, and there was this symmetry of the pineapple and the head. And I looked at the pineapple, and there was this almost a, you know, sort of moment where the pineapple looked back at me, and suddenly this whole fruit and vegetable market of Thai people were laughing at this white man with this hair up his head and the pineapple. And so I realised, oh, I want this, I can get people to laugh with this visual link. And then later when I went to Australia, I did some busking, some street performing as a sidekick. I wasn't a confident solo performer, but this guy got me to help him as his sidekick, and he did a sort of generic busking show with a big tall unicycle and all this sort of stuff. And I'd help out juggling, and I always take out a pineapple and pull my hair up, and people started calling me Mr. Pineapple Head. So I got this sort of name given to me as Mr. Pineapple Head, and I travelled around, and a bit later the hair grew so long that it all flopped down and it wouldn't stay up, so I built a hat. I made a hat. I had this hat out of leather which came up, and then the hair came out the top, and that kept it going. And then at a later stage, my hair grew too long, and I just got rid of the hat. I wanted to, you know, change the thing, cut my hair. But I kept this hat, and I adjusted it, and I made leaves. And this clown persona called Mr. Pineapple Head evolved, basically, out of this sort of process of my life. And I'd, when I was back in England, I started to sort of help. I got involved again with someone just mucking around, doing bits and pieces with shows. And I started to do like kids' parties and things like that, and little local shows. I found I could do it, and I thought, well, actually, I prefer doing this than screen printing, my regular job.
On your own?
Yeah, this was now starting to do, or I'd someone that ran a business, he'd get me to sort of back him up, and then I started having little solo jobs. There was a kind of intermediate phase where I had work, and then this was a sideline. I started clowning as a sideline, and then it kind of gradually took over, really, over a couple of years, and I started, so about, and then when our kids came along, I really sort of got me act together, okay, let's kind of, you know, make this work, and it's been fantastic, because it's enabled me to work quite intensely on a weekend. So I'd do four shows on a weekend, and this would be locally, This would be doing like a kids' party sort of in Sussex. And that would earn enough money to pay the bills and everything for the week. So I'd have 5 days being a man of leisure, 2 days working, making people laugh, doing shows. It's just a lot better than working every day, losing my mind and doing a monotonous job. And I had loads and I was sort of, and it also enabled me to be sort of full-time dad as well. And I loved kids, you know, so I've kind of been a kind of a house husband and clown for the last kind of 14 years, really. That's kind of what I've done. And my clowning started off quite circus skills based. That was my way in, really, and vocal. And over time, I've sort of got more and more interested in the actual clowning. And I try and put stuff back in, as well as gaining from just experience of doing lots of shows. I have also done training. And like that original first course, I started doing more courses, like masterclasses in physical comedy or clowning. Clowning is a bit of a funny word. There's a lot of really crap clowns, association is bad, but there is a whole art of skillful clowning, which sometimes you get. There's like the London Mime Festival, I don't know if you've heard of that, but there's stuff you get, these Russian clowns and Eastern Europeans. There's some quite amazing artistic clowning, very sensitive clowning, which I am very inspired by. So I've done training and I've travelled, I've done courses all over the world in sort of clowning, and started to evolve that. And I've now got to a point in my show where it's almost totally silent. I now have a show that's where I speak maybe 5 words in 3/4 of an hour. It's all sort of visual, physical theatre kind of clowning, which I love doing, and it kind of works really nicely. So that's where I'm. That's the story of my kind of clown thing to date.
And the very visual performing that you're doing at the moment, again, is that still for kids? Or is that for other audiences?
Both, actually. Commercially, my main work, my bread and butter, is kids' work. I'm also just now doing research and playing with adults. I'm just currently forming a group of adults. And I've done a bit of cabaret work and stuff. And I'd done little forays into the sort of comedy club world, doing silent stuff, physical comedy stuff, and it goes down well, but I find that the comedy club world is very alcohol based, and it doesn't really appreciate subtlety and sensitivity. And even though what I do does go down well, someone can just do something really crude and what I'd consider quite easy to do, and it goes down just as well. So I'm not that interested in the comedy club circuit for me. I'm not negating that some brilliantly skilled, and I find some comedians very funny, but for me, that's not. Well, I'd really, kind of, one of my ambitions is to develop a theatre clown show inspired by some of these like great Russian clown, international clowns I've seen. That's kind of my dream.
Would you tour it?
Yeah.
How are you going to spend your time?
Yeah, on today I'm going to be a frog. I'm not going to do a sort of perform. I figure there's probably not going to be many people up there, and quite a far distance. I've had a look at the space. And I'm thinking I'm not going to do my regular work. I'm not going to do clowning up there because that's my job. I'm going to try and use the space as best I can. I'm going to do something quite simple and visual, and take time over it. And I'm gonna be a frog. And I'm gonna do a spot of fishing, and I'm gonna read the paper. I'm gonna make some bubbles, and maybe have a bit of a boogie if I feel in the mood.
Why did you choose to be a frog? Any particular reason?
Yeah, now that takes right back to growing up as a teenager in the village. Where I grew up, there's this amazing sort of floodplain below the village, and there are these brooks, and a brook is a Sussex name for like a fairly still stream, like these drainage ditches, but they're full of plants, they're sort of full of wildlife, and there's all these brooks in the valley where I lived. And in these brooks, there's this frog called the marsh frog. These frogs, they're called marsh frogs, and they're quite amazing. They're actually a non-native frog. They were brought over from Europe about 80 years ago. And they've colonised the southeast of England, and they're quite amazing. The marsh frogs, they this season where they got this there's just loads of them down in these brooks, and they build up this croak that's quite incredible. And if you go for a walk in a hot evening in May and June, all night, they're croaking all night, to the point it's deafening. You can't hear yourself speak when you're near there. And it's, well, in fact, I'll do a master of croak. Don't mind for a while, so warm up. But the croak is something like this. It's a, that's a marsh frog croak. It's a bit like a laugh. When you got lots of it, it's almost like, that's what, they were called the laughing marsh frogs of Romney Marsh. That's where they first colonised them. Yeah, when I was a, you know, I was quite a geek as well. I'm quite proud of my geekdom as my teenager. And I was a member of the East Sussex Herpetological Society, which is that's the study of reptiles and amphibians. And so I was really into wildlife, particularly reptiles, amphibians, and frogs was my speciality. I became a frog expert.
How old were you?
And I was about 18, yeah, and I used to do ponds conservation work and surveys, and I built ponds, and I was involved in research of great crested newts, frogs, grass snakes, the whole sort of thing. But yeah, so I had a big thing, and the marsh frog became quite an identity thing. I remember I used to, when I was a bit older, even in Brighton, me and my friends, if I was walking around late at night, drunk, I'd just start croaking in the middle of the night at the top of my voice through little lanes in the middle of the night as my kind of my call. I did identify with the and the frogs. What's great is with the croak, if you start croaking, they'll croak back. So I used to actually spend time communicating with the frogs. You sit on a quiet spot, you do the croak, and you wait and want to croak back. And you could get a whole rhythm going, and you build it up, and suddenly you get hundreds of them all croaking. So it's quite amazing. So you can actually have this genuine energy exchange between a human and a frog down where you used to live. It's quite a very inspiring kind of thing for me. And when I was making my pineapple hat, one time I did a little sort of apprenticeship in leather craftsmanship. This is in Australia, with this amazing leather craftsman called David Skeets, and he taught me a lot about making masks and stuff. And I made this mask, a frog mask, which I'm going to use tonight. And I used to perform with it in a band, funnily enough, in my sort of late 20s, this sort of psychedelic kind of rave band. And I used to do stuff then with this frog mask. That was one act. I used to do this sort of I was a kind of like almost a Bez kind of character. I'd do sort of little visual gags and a bit of backing vocals and just sort of vibes, man, sort of thing. But a frog was one of the things I'd do. And I thought it'd be nice. I was thinking what would be nice here, even though I'm not going to do what I did then, I thought the frog would be a really nice thing to do here. And I liked that if dressing quite smart, almost a kind of Toad Hall kind of thing. I think it'd be quite a nice visual thing. And the side to me is a frog. I'm going to summon my kind of inner frog a little bit when I'm up there and, you know, get into the thing, kind of frog man vibe.
How did you hear about this project? Can you remember?
Yeah, the first I heard of it was through a friend that was on it. And my mother-in-law was on it as well. So two friends came on it. That's how I heard of it, actually, from word of mouth, from other people.
Do you want to apply?
Yeah, I don't know, actually. I thought there was not much chance of getting on, because I didn't apply till August, and so it was only 2 months left. And I thought, well, that could be quite... Well, I tell you what, I've seen quite a lot of things. There's been quite a lot of stuff on here. I thought it's been rubbish. All the people just doing a charity awareness thing and all that. I think, what a waste of an opportunity. You know, you could, this is a space you could do something with. I'm not saying I'll be great, but there's, you know, some people have done some really interesting stuff here, and a lot of people don't. And I think it's good to do something creative on this space.
Do you have any idea what you would do if you weren't a performer? If you didn't have that experience?
Yeah, I think I'd just be myself, I think. But I don't think I would do a charity, like a cause. I think it's, and for me, even, and this why, in a way, I'm not doing my clown show. I'm just being me. And the frog is actually something that's quite deep. It's quite part of me. It goes back to my kind of rites of passage growing up, kind of childhood, really. And So even though I've got performance skills and awareness, I suppose, so, and maybe that'll show, ultimately I'm not doing performance is going to lead anywhere commercially or anything like that. It's just really showing you some of what I like. I'm going to play music which I like. It's my, some of my favourite tunes. And
what kind of music are you?
A variety, an eclectic range. I've got a bit of some very atmospheric music by John Cernan. It's called, he does his very sort of ambient atmospheric stuff. A bit of folk, a bit of country, a bit of rock, and a bit of funk. Yeah. And a bit of reggae. I can't remember, I didn't do much because I'm not very good at I'm not very good at typing things on a computer. So I did probably the bare minimum. I think I probably just said my job, I'm a clown. I don't think I did an awful lot, if I'm honest.
You talked earlier on about having this, going through this hippie phase. Mm. Is that still part of your persona, do you think?
Yeah, in my heart it is, yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, love, you know, in a genuine thing, I think, yeah, you know, peace and love to the world is a, yeah, yeah, I stand by that. Yeah, even though I'm a fairly kind of straight, upright kind of citizen, I kind of ultimately, in the day, I could sit around a fire and with my barefoot playing a didgeridoo and love it. Yeah, I kind of actually like that kind of very earthy. For me, that's something kind of hippiness is just kind of being, yeah, sitting around a fire with your friends, you know, pretty mellowed out and kind of playing music, that kind of natural way, yeah. And I'm very passive, I'm a very non-aggressive person as well, you know, I can't, so I guess that's probably why naturally I'm not very good at dealing with conflict or confrontations. I'm useless at confrontations, you know, I'm one of those people, if I'm in a situation where I've been sort of attacked psychically or whatever, I'm kind of one of those people that never knows what to say at the time, and afterwards I'm going, damn, I wish I'd said that, that's what, whereas I'll just swallow it and walk, you know, I can't, you know.
How does your clown deal with it? How does your clown persona deal with it?
Yeah, now the clown persona does deal with it quite well. The clown persona deals with it in just, it's quite almost detached, it's quite like, think, as a clown, I guess if there's a reaction, if something happens, I think that's interesting. Well, interesting. And observe and react accordingly. I think the clown. Yeah, I don't really get attacked. Do I get attacked as a clown? You get heckling sometimes. I generally don't get a hard type of audience as much as I used to, just through sort of experience. It's a bit like an experienced teacher doesn't need to raise their voice, you know, that when you're learning you may be shouting a lot, and as you get more experience you're not bothered. So in fact I'm not bothered by anything, and so hecklers don't bother, people realise they can't get a reaction by you. So generally as a clown, if I'm doing my show, if someone doesn't like it, if someone's booing, I'm like, fine, I don't care, you don't have to like it, which you don't have to, you're all free to like. So I'm not ultimately, all right, I really want to make people laugh, but I'm not going to lose sweat over whether people hate me or love me, you know, it's up, you can't please everyone, you know, and sort of accept that. I think you have to accept every reaction is genuine. Sometimes people have their own agenda, and then I think, well, that's you on your own agenda, so that's fine, you get on with it.
How do you think people
will
react to you while you're on the
fence? No idea. If they'll react at all, I don't know what people, I don't know what the people are going to be up there, you know, whether there'll be anyone up there. It might be quite quiet, it's 1 o'clock on Tuesday morning, so I'm thinking there might be 3 people and a couple of pigeons if I'm lucky, but apparently the pigeons are gone now because there's a hawk man, so you don't even get the pigeons, so there won't even be any pigeons out there, so we'll see. I've no, you know, probably a bit of, it'd be nice if some people did gather and watched, were interested. I'd like to create interest. That's what I'd like to do. But if not, never mind.
Or is it another? Do you treat it as a performance
or not? Am I treating it as a performance? I guess the side of me, yes and no. But side of me is compelled to treat it as a performance. But I'm also thinking, actually, this isn't a performance space, and it's not, you know, it's not a theatre environment, really. You know, it's as a performance space, it's not great, because it's a terrible performance space, really. You know, if you look at it as a performance space, I wouldn't do a gig there, no way. You're in the middle of nowhere, and people are miles away. So I'm not looking to try and get actual engagement with an audience, and I'm going to be wearing a mask, so I'm not even going to have eye contact with people for most of the time I'm up there. So it really is, let's see what happens. I'm kind of going to play as much for the camera. I think there's probably more people that in reality are going to see this on their computers than in Trafalgar Square. So I'm kind of am torn between, do I play with the people in front of me or actually forget about that? This is 1 o'clock in the morning, there's hardly anyone there, but a lot of people are going to watch it tomorrow morning on their computers, so play it for the cameras.
Is there anything else you'd like to say before you go up on the plinth?
Anything else you'd like to say? I think it's a great idea. That's what I want. I think it's a fantastic idea, that the plinth, and the idea of having one person every hour for 3 months, that this representation of all walks of life, of people, is a brilliant. It's a nice one, Anthony Gormley. Brilliant. You know, that's, yeah. And all the people that work here, it's good, yeah.
Thank you very much.